Hello again. Welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks for sticking around for our second hour today, which is Midday on the Bay, our monthly show produced in partnership with the Chesapeake Bay Journal. Today on the show, lessons from food boot camp. Can cleaner eating lead to a cleaner planet? And if so, how do we get there? Do we have to give up everything we love to eat, or does moderation work? Is the local food movement, the locavore movement, destined to be a boutique food stand for the affluent, or can local produce feed the masses? How do we determine if our food is really locally grown without the antibiotics, pesticides, and other chemicals that seem so pervasive in the food supply? Lots of questions this hour. Joining us to discuss all this is Midday on the Bay contributor Rona Cabell. Rona, a reporter with the Chesapeake Bay Journal. And Rona recently lost 40 pounds attempting her own version of what she calls clean eating. She attended a food boot camp up at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, and she's going to tell us about her weight loss and what she learned at that boot camp this hour, that food boot camp. Rona, nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too.
So I set this up a little bit and said, this is Rona gets personal in this hour a little bit, but for a good reason. So if you don't mind, let me just start with this by asking you to just tell us a little bit about your decision to lose weight and how you did it, because that's impressive, 40 pounds.
Thank you. So like most people, this wasn't my first rodeo. I've been on diets throughout my life. I went on a major diet, almost a starvation diet, when I was 14 before I started high school. And I maintained a pretty normal, sort of slightly higher than normal weight through high school and college. Mm-hmm. And then I just sort of began to put on a little bit of weight every year. And then I met my husband and put on a little more weight, as women do. And then I lost 20 pounds before my wedding, as women do. Mm-hmm. And then over the years, I sort of slowly gained weight every year until I got pregnant at age 33 with my first child, and then sort of never really lost it and sort of hung on to that extra 40 plus pounds from that point on.
Okay. So over all that time, what were your eating habits like in terms of exercise? How much of that did you do? And I have to say here with this question, I read the blog posts that you posted on the Chesapeake Bay Journal last night, and that I linked to the Dan Rodericks Facebook page, where you explained how you really didn't eat a lot of junk food through most of your life.
No, that's the sort of surprising thing. I always wondered, why am I heavy or fat, if you want to say that. I'm 42. I've never had a fast food hamburger.
Never had a fast food hamburger.
Never. I don't really like French fries, potato chips. I never drink soda, not regular, not diet. I don't drink anything really besides water and usually one cup of coffee a day. I don't really like meat. I do eat meat, but I'm not a big meat eater. I don't really have steak or fried chicken or meatloaf. I've always gravitated towards salads, and I've always been a pretty big exerciser. Even when I was, 40 plus pounds heavier, I would go to the gym 3 or 4 times a week. So it wasn't until I had a personal trauma, I actually had a miscarriage, that I went to the doctor and I was diagnosed with polycystic ovarian syndrome. Now, this is something that you might have heard about because they've been talking about it with the Supreme Court decision. Women who have this often take birth control pills to help with their symptoms. So what it means for people like me is it creates this insulin resistance. So my doctor explained it like this. Everybody else is processing sugar like a Toyota or a Chevrolet. I'm a race car. I burn it and then I need more. So that's...
And that's because of this metabolic condition.
It's because of this metabolic condition that I have that a lot of other undiagnosed women, I think, have also.
Okay. So given that, did you figure out the best way to go about losing weight given that?
Yes, and really it's the same for people who don't have the condition. It's pretty simply to cut carbs and sugar. Now, most people who want to lose weight already know this.
Right.
But what I didn't realize is to the degree to which you must cut them and really how many mindless carbs I had been eating before. Your sort of Triscuits and your pretzels and your animal crackers and, things that aren't necessarily apparently fattening. But if you eat too much of them, they're not really good for you, and they're full of processed foods. And so, say you go to Subway and you get a turkey sandwich. Well, the bread has, you think it's healthy, and it is relatively healthy compared to the other options, but the bread has carbs, and if you get a bag of chips with it, that's carbs, and it's more bread than I would probably eat in a day, even the 6-inch one, because it's, you know, it's a fairly large piece of bread.
But what if you put sprouts on them?
Oh, don't get me started on sprouts.
Don't get you started on sprouts?
Sprouts
well,
are...
Wait a minute. A healthy sandwich, what is it? A sunny side sandwich with sprouts on it?
Yeah, well,
it's supposed to be healthy.
I would have thought that sprouts were great for you, but I learned at the food boot camp at MIT that sprouts are just about the best vector there is for E. coli. And
Tell me that.
Sorry.
Really? Okay.
Maybe spinach is better. Spinach is also an E. coli vector, but I eat it every day anyway. I just have to have it. So
a word about this. So you really had to educate yourself on losing weight given this condition you had.
Yes, and it's true that there is a lot of information about diets and exercise. I have on my nightstand probably 7 diet books right now.
Didn't you find it very conflicting and confusing?
I did, because as much as there's so much information, it changes all the time. So we learned in the 70s and 80s, low fat, low fat, low fat. And then we ate low fat, but we kept getting fatter.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because they took out the fat and they loaded in carbs and sugar. And so now, you know, we understand that we shouldn't eat too much carbs and sugar, but no one really tells us exactly how much. So we think we're eating low carb, but we're really not. So for me,
what did you find that worked for you then?
I found just to try this, what they call clean eating, as close to the original source of the food as I possibly could. So I eat a lot of plant-based foods. I eat a lot of salads, vegetables, cucumbers, peppers, hummus, beans, green yogurt. Eggs are great, especially
Greek yogurt.
Greek yogurt. Zero.
Not green yogurt.
Greek
yogurt.
When
the yogurt's green, I throw it out.
Oh, yeah. That's a bad sign. Yes.
I'm sorry. You say green.
Oh, sorry. Unless
that's
you're putting
funny.
Spinach in your yogurt or something.
No. Greek yogurt. As opposed to other kinds
like
of yogurt?
If you buy like a Chobani yogurt or one of the other kinds, some of them have as much as maybe 15 grams of sugar in them. So that's kind of high in sugar for me. Or carbs, maybe that much carbs. So I go with the Greek yogurt, and then I put like a tiny bit of honey in it or something just to give it some taste.
Well, let me go over what you just said then. So you hit vegetables pretty hard. You say hummus.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned beans.
Yes.
Greek yogurt. What about meats? Any kind of meats at all?
I do. I eat chicken. I eat a lot of salmon. My children happen to like fish, so I make fish about once a week at my house.
Okay.
I make all kinds of fish, cod, salmon.
What about eggs?
I eat a lot of eggs.
Eggs are in there. So what you're really focusing on is sugar and carbs.
Right.
You worried more about that, given your condition, than fat.
Right. And I've also found that it's kind of hard to overeat fat. If you're overeating fat, you're also overeating carbs. If the things you're overeating are potatoes and french fries and things like that. But if you're eating lamb chops, you're probably not going to overeat them. I mean, that's sort of a good fat kind of thing where, you know, it has fat in it, but you're not going to gorge on it.
Let me ask you this before we go on, because we mentioned the food boot camp a couple of times, just for our listeners to understand. This is a fellowship you won to MIT. Is this part of the Knight Science Foundation? Do they put it on?
Yes.
Okay. So that's where you went, and that's where you learned a lot of this that you're telling us about today.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So go back to your weight loss, your effort to lose some weight. Over what period of time was this? How long did it take you to lose this weight?
The first time I lost the weight, I was 38 years old, and it was just after my miscarriage. I had one child, and she was 5, and I took it very seriously because if I didn't, I wasn't going to be able to get pregnant. Mm. So there were no cheat days. I exercised hard for 1 hour a day, and it took me 40 months to lose it took me 4 months to lose 40 pounds.
Okay.
Sorry,
so 40 months would be
That would not be a very good success.
Not very impressive.
4 months.
4 months.
4 months to lose 40 pounds.
That is impressive. And you skipped over exercise a little bit there. Just tell us a little bit about that.
So I would do 1 hour a day, every day of exercise at that time.
What kind?
I ran a lot. I would cycle. I belong to a gym and they have these classes called Body Pump, which is weights and cardio in one. I would do that sometimes. Stretching. Sometimes I would do hot yoga. for an hour and a half, just something for at least an hour. I said, it took me
4 months.
4 months, but I was extremely serious about it.
You were motivated because your doctor told you, unless you lose this weight,
right,
you're not going to get pregnant again.
Right. And then I got pregnant, and then I gained all that 40 pounds back, plus a little bit more. And I hung on to that weight for a year while I was breastfeeding. And then when my baby was a year old, I decided, okay, that's it. It's time to get serious.
And so what did you do? The same thing you'd done before?
I did the same thing I did before, but I was on the other side of 40. I'm 42 now. So I was 40 when I decided to take this on again. And it took me a year to drop that same 40 pounds. It took me a year to drop. But the good part about it, that is that I really learned to keep it off. And while I do intend to lose more, I'm aware now that it's an extremely slow process. And a friend of mine who's 60 told me that women's metabolisms begin to be cruel to them at 40, and then they continue to be cruel.
So it makes it harder.
It makes it harder, yes.
Now, obviously, you had personal reasons for wanting to become healthier. And I need to ask you this, Rona Cabell of the Chesapeake Bay Journal, environmental reporter who attended the food boot camp for science and environmental writers at MIT. How does this connect back to your job at the Chesapeake Bay Journal? How did you go about making these connections?
We talk constantly at the Bay Journal about the Chesapeake Bay pollution diet, the amount of nutrients that we're putting in the bay. And we speak often of this giant buffet of pollution that the bay is gorging on, sediment, phosphorus, nitrogen, and now, of course, things that we don't even know what they do, pesticides and what we call these emerging contaminants and these endocrine disruptors. So I started to think about what we're doing. What we're doing is we're piling on nitrogen to grow corn that feeds chickens that are fattened up so much that they can barely walk, and then we're giving them antibiotics. Those antibiotics make us resistant to the antibiotics that we need to fight our own infections. And we wouldn't need to feed the chicken these antibiotics if we grew them in less crowded conditions. In my mind, it all relates, and it was like a light went off and made me realize how it all connected. And I mean, Dan, I'll be honest, I can't say that this knowledge has made me change all of my habits. I'm still a mom of two kids. I still have to get dinner on the table. I don't have an unlimited budget, but it's really pushed me to make a lot of changes in my life and to change how I see these things being connected.
Well, let me ask you this then. You mentioned chickens and antibiotics and chickens being raised in crowded conditions until they're big and fat and then given antibiotics. So what do you do about that as a consumer?
You have to be really careful about looking at labels. Purdue just branched into selling a chicken that's labeled no antibiotics ever. They bought a company in Pennsylvania that was raising these organic chickens without antibiotics. And this chicken has been such a huge seller that the company's actually thinking about doing more of this. People are starting to become very aware. You almost have to be a detective in the meat aisle. You have to look at the food. You have to look at the ingredients. You have to see what the labels mean. It is very confusing. There's organic. There's no hormone. There's no antibiotic. There's cage-free.
And can you trust all the claims?
I think you have to be very careful. I know a lot of small farmers that have been approached by Whole Foods or other kind of large companies who've said, oh, we love your product, we'd love to get it into our store. But in order to get it into their store, they have to make changes that they're not always comfortable making, you know, to get the production level at a point where you can make a profit. So then they have to start adding things, and it's not always really what you want.
Interesting to me. Well, you don't eat a lot of meat, but you say you eat a lot of fish, and fish can be pricey, but you feel it's worth it because, you know, it's healthier, cleaner eating, as you say. When it comes to chicken, then, say you don't have chicken more than once a week. So you figure once a week, I'll spend a little more and get that which is labeled organic or does not contain antibiotics. Is that your thinking?
Right. I kind of mix it up. I mean, I do try to buy the chicken without antibiotics. Sometimes I buy kosher chicken, which I've been buying for a long time. I don't know that that's antibiotic free, but my children tend to like it more and I tend to like it more. So, but you have to, like when you buy the frozen chicken, like the pre-breaded frozen chicken, just look really careful at the label, see what's in it. I encountered one time I bought some frozen fish for my daughter and I gave it to her and she had an allergic reaction. And I called the doctor and I said, I gave my daughter fish and she has an allergic reaction. What do I do? He said, give her Benadryl. And then I went to go look at the box to see what exactly she was allergic to, and I could not figure it out.
It's too many ingredients.
Too many ingredients. I had no idea.
So that's not the fish she was used to.
It's not the fish she was used to, but I don't think it was the fish. I think it was this list of 26 polybiphenol,
right.
urethane,
right.
Bisphenols, you know,
right.
whatever was in the that I didn't know what it was. So I'm being more careful now because that happened to us.
We'd like to hear from our listeners in this hour of the show to compare notes with Rona Cabell about dieting, about healthier eating, about this whole attitude, and whether you've adopted these attitudes toward this approach toward selecting food and cooking food for yourself and your family. So here's the phone number, 410-662-8780. Rona, we'll take a break here and invite calls in to compare notes with you on this. And we'll also hear more about the MIT food boot camp that you attended and what you learned there. Dan Roderick's with Rona Cabell, talking more in the coming segment about how she changed her eating habits and lost weight. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here. If you'd like to join us, or send a comment or question by email, midday@wypr.org. I mentioned Rona's blog post that's on my Facebook page if you'd like to read that. And welcome back, everyone. Dan Roderick's here on Midday. It's Midday on the Bay with Rona Cabell of the Chesapeake Bay Journal. By the way, you can read Rona's stories and other stories about the Bay at bayjournal.com. And you can subscribe to the paper and get a free newspaper in your mailbox every month, which is pretty cool, or just read it online. So, Rona, before we go on, I want to hear a little bit more about the food boot camp. We want to take some calls from our listeners, too. You mentioned that you learned at the food boot camp at MIT that raw sprouts on a sandwich, raw sprouts in a salad or whatever, can be a vector for E. coli. One of our listeners called in to challenge that assertion, that fact, that statement. But we checked at foodsafety.gov, and foodsafety.gov, which is a pretty reliable source here, says that like any fresh produce that is consumed raw, sprouts carry a risk of foodborne illness. Since 1996, there have been at least 30 reported outbreaks of foodborne illnesses associated with different types of raw and lightly cooked sprouts. Most of these outbreaks were caused by Salmonella and E. coli. Children, the elderly, pregnant women, and persons with weakened immune systems should avoid eating raw sprouts of any kind, including alfalfa, clover, radish, and mung bean sprouts. Cook sprouts thoroughly to reduce the risk of illness. Cooking kills the harmful bacteria. So, this is a little example of something. What is your approach to that now, given what you learned at the food boot camp and what I just read from foodsafety.gov?
I was surprised to learn at the food boot camp about the problems with sprouts and also the problems with spinach. But I think that the example of the listener calling and what you just found online illustrates the discrepancy between what many of us think are healthy and good for us and what actually is. I think it, you know, there is a lot of wrong information out there, misinformation out there. And I think when you learn after the food boot camp, I started wondering, well, what am I supposed to eat if all of my favorite vegetables are carriers for E. coli and Salmonella, and you never know about meat, and you know, the you stay away from the carbs and the sugar, you're left with dairy, but then dairy's got issues, and so you know, you do sort of get into this spiral. What can I eat? But I do think that this message about sprouts, at least I had no idea. I was shocked to learn it, but it is true, and you do have to be careful. I mean, you can, if you're at home, you can wash your own sprouts, of course, and cook them. But if you're at Subway and they give you sprouts on a sandwich, I might ask to hold them.
Okay.
So,
tell us a little bit about the food boot camp. I mentioned before that it was a Knight Science Foundation. You got a fellowship to go up there for how long?
It was a week.
Oh, it was a week. So tell us what you learned from that and what the takeaway for you was.
There were two sort of things that really resonated with me. One is that all calories are not created equally, which I guess I sort of knew, but we still think a calorie is a calorie. So you could eat, say, a healthy person could eat a bowl of oatmeal for breakfast, a salad for lunch, and a chicken breast for dinner. That's about 1,000 calories, sort of give or take. Or you could eat four bags of M&Ms and get 1,000 calories.
But it's not the same.
It's not the same, right. Yeah. And when you add sugar or white flour to foods, you get obesity. The other thing that I learned, which was for me just personally fascinating, was that as a country, we're taking in about 30% more calories than we did in 1970, mostly through processed foods and handy snacks.
Well, so, let's stop and think about that for a minute. 30% more calories than we did 40 plus years ago.
Right.
Okay.
So
per day.
So
or
what
just,
that,
just in general.
Yeah. What that means, to unpack it a little bit, is a pound is 3,600 calories. So we're taking in about 523 more calories a day. If we did this every day consistently, we would gain 54 pounds a year.
Let me check your math on that. Yeah, no, I got it.
Yeah. So you might think, well, that's not possible, right? We're not gaining 54 pounds a year. We're gaining maybe 10, 15, 20
yeah.
pounds a year.
Right.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Or some people, maybe 10. But, you know, it's not that hard to do to put on an extra 10, 15 pounds a year.
So how does that happen?
So not to pick on Starbucks, because I'm a regular Starbucks customer, but recently Starbucks started putting the calories of all of their baked goods in the bakery chest.
Yeah,
in the boulangerie.
Yeah.
You noticed that, yeah.
I noticed that, yeah.
So a lemon pound cake is about 525 or 535 calories. Mm. So if you ate one of them every day, there you go. But let's say you're not going to eat one of them every day. Let's say you're going to eat them a couple times a week. And let's say you're a little more sedentary than you normally would be, because either it's Baltimore winter and it's freezing, or it's Baltimore summer and it's sweltering and you're not exercising as much. And you're eating, you know, occasionally other things like a glass of orange juice, which has a lot more sugar
yeah.
than it used to. Then all of a sudden,
it has more sugar than a glass of orange juice has more sugar today than it did 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, they've added sugar to make it sweeter, and you know, an orange is expensive, right? But
yeah.
sugar is cheap. So, you know, you're not putting as much fresh orange juice in, you're adding more sugar and more carbohydrates and more of that, like, you know, syrupy sugar stuff. So you can see how easy it would
it
be
easy,
to
yeah.
put on the weight.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you from my personal experience,
okay.
taking it off.
Well, that's what we wanted to hear.
Is not easy. Is much harder.
So how does that change how you did things in your life, Rona Cabell? What do you do now?
So I had kind of already cut out all the beverages besides water and coffee, and I'm not really an alcohol drinker, so I had already sort of cut that. But what it made me realize is that is how I gained weight slowly over the time. The occasional and not so occasional indulgence, muffins for breakfast, mm-hmm. processed foods, you know, a half a box of Triscuits for a snack, or, you know, too many pretzels or this kind of thing. And that really, for me, I need to stay away from the processed foods. And I think not just for me, but for a lot of people, because what they do is they don't really fill you up. So you eat more of them and then you need more of them. So
let me go over that with you. So filling up, say, on fresh fruit and vegetables, greens especially.
Yes.
You felt like that was filling you up in a good way. And you weren't
yes.
you're not bored with your diet.
Oh, I'm bored with my diet. I wish I was more of a chef, because if I was, I would be less bored with my diet. I tend to eat the same things over and over and over again.
Mm.
I sometimes come up with a new recipe here and there, and I know there's a lot of information out there available for people.
But you got to work at it.
You do have to work yeah. at it. And I mean, I'm not a terrible cook. I'm a pretty good cook, but I'm nothing approaching a great cook. And I can kind of make the simple things over and over again.
So the main message I'm getting from you is that you're watching carbs and sugar very carefully and trying to keep that low.
Yes.
Now, what about a cheat day? Now, you mentioned Starbucks and the lemon pound cake.
Yes.
Okay, so once every 2 weeks, a cheat day? Do you buy into cheat days? I think they get a bad rap being called that. It's just sort of like, okay, I did well for 2 weeks. The weekend comes, I'm going to enjoy something that I don't usually enjoy.
I might have a little indulgence here or there, but I agree the cheat day thing gets a bad rap. And the reason why is because people think, oh, I've already lost the day because I've had an ice cream. I may as well have this brownie. And I've already had this brownie and this ice cream. I may as well eat a whole burrito at Chipotle. And, oh, I've eaten that already. You know, the day's shot.
But tomorrow I'll just have salads, right?
So that's why I don't like the term cheat day, because it sort of... gives you the whole day to kind of mess up. And for me, it takes me a long time to get back on track after something like that. So, you know, I do occasionally, the thing I really love is ice cream, and I do occasionally still eat it. Not as often as I used to, but I will eat it. And to me, it's just sort of, you have to have some things that you still enjoy or else you'll just be depressed.
You look good.
Thank you.
And you feel like you're keeping the weight off. I mean, do you actively like step on scales and all that?
Every day, Rona?
I appreciate you sharing your story with us, Rona Cabell. I mean, actually, it's inspiring. And you did it without any gimmicks, really, or any fads that I see. It sounds like you're eating healthy. Maybe your challenge now is just to be a little more creative so you don't get bored with this over time.
Yes, and my other challenge is with exercise. I'm still pretty good about going. You know, I exercise 4 times a week, but I am getting a little bit bored with my routine, and I think my body is getting bored too. So I think it's really important to mix it up and do weights and flexibility and other things. So I'm working on that. That's my sort of challenge for the next year, is to do more with that.
Rona Cabell from the Chesapeake Bay Journal. It's another edition of Midday on the Bay. This one we're getting a little more personal than usually to hear Rona's story and what she learned from food boot camp up at MIT. And I like to compare notes with our listeners on this, because I know this is something that hits home for everybody. You know, how to keep weight off, how to lose weight, how to keep it off, how to eat healthy. And if you're on a budget, you know, how do you do that too? Because there are some challenges there when it comes to how much it costs to eat what you think is healthy food. Kate in Baltimore, we'll go to you first. Hi, Kate. Welcome to Midday.
Hi, Dan. Thank you so much. I love your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to make the comment that actually, in addition to weight loss, there's just so much to be gained from cutting out sugar. I cut out sugar completely from my diet about 7 years ago. Overt sugar, but then also covert sugar, and it's in so much. And it was initially because I had been diagnosed with adult, I'm 29, and I'd been in college diagnosed with some depression, and then also they thought some attention deficit, and went on medication for a little while, but then it wasn't until I took the sugar out that I noticed all sorts of just new levels of clarity. My mood changed, my skin got better, and so I'd always been a pretty steady weight on my life, and a little bit more on the slender side. So it wasn't really so much the weight for me, but cutting out sugar has just really changed so much of my life qualitatively. So I just wanted to make that comment.
Kate, before you go, I want to ask you something. So when you say cut out sugar, what about a nice peach? And what about an orange? What about a nice juicy pear? Because while these things are healthy and full of fiber, right, Rona, there's also natural sugars in them.
Oh, that's a great point. I should make the clarification that I do eat some natural sugars, so fruit. I still bake. I bake with a lot of fruit-based sugars, but I've cut out anything that's going to be a really high concentrated level of sugar.
Okay.
So all white sugars, definitely, but then honey is a little too much for me still. But I just noticed that it was really connected to me for my mood.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate that call. It's an excellent point.
Thank you.
No Entenmann's raspberry coffee cake for our listener. Let's go back to the phone lines up in Moncton. That was Kate. This is Mark in Moncton. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Dan. How are you?
Good, thanks.
I had a question about fish. You mentioned that your family likes fish, and particularly salmon, and so does ours. And at our sort of high-end grocery store, you can buy these frozen pieces of salmon that are a nice size and relatively inexpensive, but they're farm-raised, versus the wild salmon, which is beautiful and delicious but is very expensive. And so can you talk a little about the two and the environmental impact issues of farm-raised salmon?
Sure. That's a great question. I think I personally buy the farm raised. The reason is because the price, and also my children don't eat the wild salmon because they claim it's too fishy. So I think I started on the farm raised salmon before I really knew much, and they got used to it. And then when I switched, they weren't real pleased. So there are a lot of environmental implications with farm raised salmon. I try to buy the farm raised salmon from Canada, and from Norway, because I've checked the information online and it seems to me that they raise it in a pretty good way. In the Asian countries, there's been a lot of concern about the way they're raising salmon in farms and how they're feeding. This is, I think, more for tilapia, but they're sometimes feeding the fish their own feces. And, you know, if you look at the photographs, some of the ones they showed us at the boot camp, it looked kind of scary. So I pretty much stopped buying tilapia. And I buy farm-raised salmon. I buy, when I can buy fresh fish, I like to buy it locally at Conrad's up by the Beltway, or at any of your markets like the Cross Street Market and the Lexington Market have really nice local fresh fish. It is probably a little cheaper than what you're going to find at the grocery store, because, you know, they have to move it. It can't really sit.
Yeah. I shop pretty hard for fish, and I run into the same problem Mark's talking about. That you have this beautiful steelhead or salmon that you see, then the price is just kind of, you know, it's discouraging. So I go with you on the farm raised, and if you cook it well, if you season it well, or I find poaching it often is a very delicious way to eat that salmon. I did find you find surprises along the way, though. Just last week in the Giant, the seafood section, there was fresh cod from Alaska, $5.99 a pound, which is a very good price for fresh fish.
That is a good price, yeah.
And this is thick, dense white meat codfish that I grew up eating this in New England. And all I did was bake it with some lemon and butter, real actual. By the way, where are you on dairy on this? Do you not cook fish with butter? Do you not use butter at all?
I'm pro dairy. I'm pro butter.
okay. This was so delicious. And I had some capers with it and some shallots. And what a delicious meal that was. And very filling and very good.
It sounds delicious. I use like a low fat butter, but I don't go for the smart balance or the fake margarines. They don't taste very, very good. And, you know, in part, it's maybe because I personally don't have an issue with fat. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, fat is healthy for you. You know, just a little bit of it is healthy for you. So
going to food boot camp did not turn you against dairy completely?
No. I mean, in a perfect world, I would really cut back on my dairy. But I've cut back on so many other things. I cannot give up my dairy.
we'll take some more phone calls after a short break here on Midday on the Bay. Dan Rodericks with Rona Cabell of the Chesapeake Bay Journal, comparing notes with you about healthy eating and losing weight in the process. 410-662-8780. We'll be right back. Rona, where are you on spaghetti? Pasta. Yeah,
I make spaghetti a lot for my family, but I don't eat it very much myself. I did just buy the Barilla whole wheat pasta. It's like it has 4 or 5 grams of fiber per serving as opposed
to 2. What
did you think of it? I thought it was all right. Thankfully, my children didn't seem to notice.
She made a face.
Do you know what's funny? I served it to them, and the power went out at my house, so they couldn't see the color, and so they couldn't see that it was brown, and so they ate it.
Okay, so you've cut it out yourself personally because of the carbs, right?
Yes, although I learned at the food boot camp, one of the people who spoke, he said, you know, it does get a bad rap, and a little bit of it is actually very good for you.
Okay.
But I haven't...
Let's go to the phone lines. Carvel in Abington. Carvel, thank you for calling. Go right ahead. You're on with Rona.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention when you were talking about the salmon, there was a piece that came out of Cornell, a short piece I saw. Oh, it's probably 8 to 10 years ago now. On the salmon, where they had done a study on the levels of junk in Norwegian salmon, Scottish salmon, and North Atlantic salmon. These are all farm-raised, of course. And they said there was so much in it, and I can't remember what the levels were, but one of them was you shouldn't eat more than once a year. The others were twice a year and 3 times a year. So that was their data at the time. That came out of food science at Cornell.
I remember. I didn't realize that it was so limiting in its advice as that, but I do remember this study and the warnings about salmon and concentration of mercury, for instance.
This is bad news for my diet.
Yeah. Well, what did you did anything? Was this addressed at the food boot camp at all? You mentioned it a little bit.
Well, they mostly focused on the farm raised fish coming out of Asia. A good amount of our seafood comes from Asia, Vietnam, China, Thailand, and they kind of warned against well, they just warned to be very careful about how this is grown, and that basically the FDA doesn't have a lot of jurisdiction over there.
Yeah.
So it's hard to know if they're if things are clean. I would sort of assume that Canada has an FDA about like ours. I mean, maybe not quite as stringent, maybe a little more stringent. So I feel comfortable buying it from Canada.
We import a lot of seafood.
We sure do.
And we also export seafood at the same time. The journalist Paul Greenberg, who's written about this, has a new book out on this very subject about why we're exporting so much seafood and importing so much. It doesn't make sense, really.
I loved his book, The Four Fish.
The
was
Four
great.
Fish is very good. And we're hoping to get him back on the show in the next month or two. And I think we have to get used to the farm-raised. I think the way the ocean is going, the wild food supply, I don't see how we're going to have much choice. Maybe we can raise them in tanks in downtown Baltimore. Maybe that's part of the solution. But I think we're going to have to get used to finding seafood from other sources. Regina wanted to say something about this, and we appreciate her calling. Regina, go right ahead.
Hi, Dan and Rona. Thank you so much for taking my call. Mm. I just wanted to mention how here in Baltimore, we're really lucky to have a lot of great food co-op services that help in, you know, creating a diet that is sustainable. I personally subscribe to Friends and Farms, and it's the only way that I have found to get high quality, responsibly raised protein into my house. I mean, I really struggle at the grocery store, but I pay the same price every week. I get two proteins. I get a variety of sustainably raised produce. And included in that, every other week, I get really great either line caught or sustainably farmed seafood. And I just can't find it anywhere else. So, you know, I always encourage people to look for either local CSAs, meat CSAs, or some of the local services that provide weekly grocery options.
Hey, Regina, I'm glad you called, because as you might remember, we had a co-founder of Friends and Farms on Midday. I think it was a Midday on the Bay segment, and Rona was here.
Yes.
And so I was eager to hear how that was working out for them, that grocery co-op. You go to a central location and pick up your weekly groceries, right, Regina?
That's right. Personally, we go to the Gilman School in Roland Park every Saturday and get our groceries for the weekend. It tides us over. It's a lot of food.
And what about, do you get poultry and eggs included?
Yeah, so every week the basket comes with two entree proteins, either poultry, pork, beef, or seafood. And you can opt in out of things like seafood and pork. It comes with a half a gallon of milk from Trickling Springs Creamery, really great dairy. Eggs every other week, breakfast meat every other week, a loaf of bread if you want it, and then 6 to 8 fresh produce items that are by far a higher quality than what I can find at the grocery store.
How does it, Regina? Okay, well, I'm glad to hear about that, about the quality, but in terms of the pocketbook, what are you looking at in terms of budget compared to, say, the usual shopping at Giant or Safeway or one of the other supermarkets?
Sure. So if I were to compare what the quality and level of sustainable products that I'm getting at the grocery store, I know it's more expensive and harder to find. We pay, I think it's $56 a week for all of that food. And there's different sizes. So if they have individual baskets or baskets for larger families. But $56 is our groceries for the week, and then we might add, you know, a couple bits here and there, maybe like some oatmeal or that type of thing, but it's absolutely more affordable than the grocery store.
Well, that's impressive.
Yes.
Regina, I appreciate hearing from you about that. Again, she's talking about Friends and Farms. Remember, we had introduced them to our listeners on the show about a year ago.
Yes. I did want to say something about that. I'm glad that there's so many of these CSAs and co-ops and things around. And I was in one myself until I forgot to sign up and lost my delicious eggs for a year. But I do worry that we're getting into a sort of boutique food situation where, even though she's not paying more than she is at the grocery store, I don't know how many people are aware of these options. I don't know how many people are available on Saturday to get to the place. And I worry that we're sort of, there's almost like two strata. There's the people who know about this and can afford it and do it. And then there are the people who can't and are eating the cheap stuff from the center of the grocery aisle or from 7-Eleven. And I think bridging the gap is really difficult.
I agree. Lorenzo in Joppa Town, our next caller.
How are you, Dan? It's a great program here.
Thank you, Lorenzo.
Good information. I'm about 7 months into getting healthy. I'm a 54-year-old man. I'm down from 202 to 187, feeling good. And you know, I've done it by basically doing a lot of the same things. First of all, you know, bad carbs and carbs are, you know, pretty much out of my diet. I just eat the good stuff that comes from vegetables and fruit, but I watch the sugar in the fruit. I am out off of sugar, period. I just don't do sugar anymore at all. I walk, enjoy my neighborhood, and that's really got me healthy. So, and I lift weights also to get stronger again. And the one thing I heard someone say earlier is about it, you know, it's more expensive to eat healthy, but I got to tell you, you know, I'm off the blood pressure medication. I'm off the cholesterol medication, you know, so I'm saving in the deductibles or whatever I had to pay for that.
Co-pays, so, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, yeah.
And I tell you, the biggest payback, I tell you that you can't measure is I just went to a family outing, and I hadn't seen everyone since Christmas, right before I started my healthy kick, and the jealousy on their faces how good I look. I mean, you know, I look like a young dude, so... So, I mean, there's definitely benefits for getting healthy. People just have to understand that and realize it's not as hard as they think it is.
Well, Lorenzo, that's a great call. And you sound healthy. We can't see you, but you sure sound good.
I just want to say congratulations.
I'm looking
good. I'm sure you are. And congratulations. That is really, really great.
And you did it mainly just by cutting out carbs. So that means you don't eat much bread at all. You eat whole grain breads and...
I use bread as a cheat for a while. My wife and I have a date night every Friday night. So after after I got down to a certain weight and I looked a certain in my pants got down to a smaller size, you know, my belt size or whatever, I said, well, I'll start having bread on Friday night. We went out about 3 weeks ago to dinner and I had some bread and I was like, yuck, I don't want it anymore.
Lorenzo, I need to ask you something. What do you have for breakfast? What did you have for breakfast today? What are you going to have tomorrow?
This morning I had, and I'll probably have the same thing tomorrow. This morning I had two boiled egg whites and a boiled egg. I also had some turkey sausage, which got a lot of sodium in it, but it's got the protein that a man needs. I'm up to having some cantaloupe. I really researched the lower sugar, better fruits, and cantaloupe isn't very, very bad. So I had some cantaloupe this morning, and I got to tell you, I eat five times a day. So, I mean, it's not like I don't eat. I eat five times a day, but I eat very healthy and I eat smaller portions. And I found now, I mean, I used to be able to put away a whole pizza, okay? But now I really can't even eat very much now. It's just, you know, I guess my stomach is shrunk. I don't know what it is, but I'm feeling really good. I got to tell you, I'm feeling awesome. So.
Way to go, Lorenzo. Thank you for the call. Thank you for the call. This is inspiring.
Yeah.
Susan in Randallstown says, I try to only use fresh and frozen veggies, but it drives me nuts having to throw out half a bag of spinach because it goes slimy before I eat it all. I even put paper towel in the bag to help absorb the condensation. Picking through slimy spinach right now for lunch salad. Any tips? All right, use some in a salad, then cook the rest, put it in the refrigerator, and then in the morning make yourself a egg white omelet with spinach.
Yeah, I would.
How you like that?
I like that idea
a lot.
Cook
it. Get it done. Finish it.
Here's something that I sometimes do when I have time. I make these things called egg cups. So you take, like, as many vegetables as you can. You crack a few eggs, add a little bit of milk, mix it all up, put it in a muffin tin with some spray or some olive oil,
yeah.
Bake it, and then in about 25 minutes, 350 degrees, you take them out and you have things that are shaped like muffins.
But they're mini frittata.
But they're exactly. It's like a mini frittata. It's like an egg. And you can, that's what I do with my slimy spinach. or you can just, you know, like Dan said, cook it up in a pan, a little garlic, a little olive oil.
So once it's cooked, it's not going to be slimy anymore. You've cooked it, right? So
then
you have a second use for it.
I don't think it's bad for you to eat it when it gets slimy. It's just, it's not really very appetizing.
And romaine lettuce, have you tried grilling romaine lettuce?
No. Is that something you recommend?
It is shocking how good that was. It calls for a little olive oil, a little bit of salt and pepper. But then you put it on the grill a couple of times till you like burn it a little bit, and it's you eat it warm. It's very good.
It sounds good.
Tygo in Baltimore. Tygo had a question for Rona. Go right ahead, Tygo.
Hey, guys. Just wanted to kind of get your take on like electronic trackers like Fitbit and Jawbone and apps on your phone, because I've been using it for about 3 months and I've lost 17 pounds, and using an app called MyFitnessPal tracks everything I eat and calories and intake. So just wanted to get you guys' take on what you guys think of those and where they're going.
I'm getting your take on it, Tygo.
Yes.
What would you say is the most effective app you've used?
Well, I use the Fitbit. It's the Fitbit One. It's about $100, and it tracks your steps and your movements during the day.
Say it again. I'm sorry. Say it again. The Fit.
The Fitbit One.
The Fitbit One.
The Fitbit is the name of the company, and okay. the one I use is called the One. Just the number. And then there's an app called MyFitnessPal, which you can input all your everything you eat during the day, and then it breaks it down and shows you pie charts of what you're eating, protein and carbohydrates, that kind of thing.
What do you think of this, Rona? What do you think? Thank you, Tygo.
Well, I'm a little embarrassed. I downloaded MyFitnessPal about a year ago, and then I started trying to put the information in, and it took long, and I got frustrated, and I never finished doing it. I think they are excellent. They help a lot of people. I was in the Mac store buying a computer, and the guy selling me the computer lost an astounding amount of weight in about 7-8 months, and he didn't change his diet. He just did the Fitness Pal, and you do get kind of addicted to them because you become part of a community and everybody's, you know, doing it. I think one of the reasons I didn't do it, not only because I was lazy about putting in the information, is because I do tend to eat the same things over and over again, so I didn't really feel it was necessary. But I have been thinking about going back to it, you know, to sort of jumpstart my next go-round.
We really appreciate you sharing these stories this hour.
Oh, and my pleasure.
Maybe you've inspired some of us. I think you have.
I thank the listeners for sharing their stories, too. Yep.
I got a couple more here by email. I'll read them quickly as we close out this hour. Trevor says, I try to eat healthy on a tight budget with 3 kids and a PhD stipend. I hunt deer as an alternative to beef. It's free range and it's organic. Here in Maryland, we're overpopulated, and it is a good environmental choice, hunting deer. I am an environmental engineer by trade.
That's great.
And this last one from Stanley says, I started to exercise at a CrossFit gym and then added paleo eating. I lost 40 pounds over 18 months. I lost weight by surprise. It was the perfect combination. My lab work and bone density have never been better. FYI, I am 62 years old.
Congratulations.
How do you like that?
That's great.
Rona Cabell of the Chesapeake Bay Journal. You can get a subscription to the Chesapeake Bay Journal. It will be mailed free to your house, right?
Yes.
Rona, didn't I say that before?
Yes, and join us on Facebook, please.
Chesapeake Bay Journal. Oh, yeah, you have a nice Facebook page. And you can read Rona's articles about food boot camp, too. Rona, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Please enjoy a nice carrot ginger soup or a tahini kale salad from Breathe Bookstore Cafe.
That sounds like it's on my diet.
Have a great afternoon, folks. We'll see you again tomorrow.
Midday senior producer is Nikki Gamer. The associate producer, Michael Himowitz. Our interns are Brian Gilbert, Tyler Downey, Anna Muckerman, and Evelyn Feeney. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcast and live streaming available at wypr.org. Dan Rogic's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.